If you're looking for real estate help, you've come to the right place. The official real estate agents of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tune in for the next hour with my buddy Andrew Duncan on the Duncan Duo Real Estate Show.
About the Tampa Bay real estate market here on the Duncan Duo Show. I'm Andrew Duncan, joined by Mike Corrigan with Cross Country Mortgage. And Mike, it sounds like there was a really famous person, ex-athlete, current Major League Baseball owner, who's renting to maybe the greatest of all time quarterback, whose house went up on the market this week.
Yes, I've heard
looks
that.
Looks like a pretty cool house, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so nonetheless, I thought it'd be a great opportunity. First off, the garage is way too small. Six-car garage with a 20-something thousand-square-foot house, a six-car garage. Come on, Derek. You got to do better than that. No, but in all seriousness, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to talk about celebrity real estate and kind of the unique aspect of working with celebrities. We've had the fortunate privilege of working with a lot of athletes and celebrities, and Derek Jeter's situation is a little bit unique because his house is so known. You know, it's so known that it's his home. When it got built, I'm sure because he at some point it wasn't an LLC. I'm sure he wanted to keep it quiet, but there was only so long you could keep a house that large so quiet without someone figuring out whose home it is. But I found it interesting that it hit the press so quickly, because what we've learned with working with celebrities is they want to do all they can to keep it discreet. But I think Derek Jeter's celebrity, especially in Tampa with the Yankees, is on such a level that even the sign going up in the yard is going to get calls to the news agencies. But a lot of celebrities and athletes do what they can to mask their identity. They put the homes in trusts. They even avoid, they don't even file homestead exemptions in a lot of instances by putting the homes in LLC. So they pay more on taxes to help preserve their identity because they don't want people knowing where they live. And similarly, when you're working with a celebrity to buy, a lot of times their agents, their attorneys are involved, and there's certain documents you have to destroy. There's, non-disclosure agreements, confidentiality agreements you have to sign. So it's a much different transaction than when you're working with a regular home buyer or seller. The discreetness, the privacy, a lot of times the hush agreement to not talk to the press about working with that particular customer. We've had to sign many of those agreements over the years working with, hockey players and Major League Baseball players, NBA players even. And it's interesting because a lot of people don't understand that. And similarly, I think that what you would find if you had a buyer interested in Jeter's mansion, I'm pretty sure you're going to have to jump through some hoops to be able to show the inside of that house.
Yeah, I don't think you can just call up and schedule a showing
with
your realtor.
In real estate, we call it pop-tarting. You know, a pop-tart is somebody calls your office and you go right out to show the house without truly qualifying them, which is a mistake that many agents often make and get themselves in trouble working with buyers that either can't buy, aren't serious, or use them and then go directly to the listing agent. But with Jeter's home, as it is the case with a lot of celebrities, personalities, high net worth individuals, even local celebrities, you're going to have to show a proof of funds on a real high level. Like, you're going to have to make it very clear that you have enough money to buy the home. And secondly, you're also going to have to sign a non-disclosure agreement, meaning that you're not going to take pictures of the home. You're not going to talk about your experience of seeing the home with the press. You know, if you run into Brady or Giselle or their kids, you're not going to be able to talk about it. So there's a unique aspect when you're working with celebrity because of their need for privacy, as well as security. Let's face it, we got a lot of crazies that park their boats outside of Jeter's house, and I'm sure some of them would love to get into the inside of it just for the aspect of walking through. The reality is, though, that just isn't normal unless you have the ability to show that you can buy it, and we're talking about a very small segment of the population that can afford a $29 million house.
Right, absolutely.
But the other aspect of working with celebrities, so the desire to be private, to not disclose information, to not talk to the press, there's another element involved when you're talking about negotiating with third parties. In many instances, They have agents and attorneys that are the ones that you're communicating with, to negotiate the contract, to put the documents together. And that makes it a little bit different because you're not dealing with the actual customer in a sense. It's a unique challenge that some real estate agents that aren't used to it struggle with because they can't really get an answer. They present something, in the normal pursuit of negotiation, you're talking to your customer and you get an agreement to do something, you send them the document. When you're talking about someone with high net worth and they have attorneys and agents involved, no, you talk to the attorney or agent. The attorney or agent has to go and talk to the celebrity or the athlete or the athlete's wife and then get back to you. So it delays the process. It's a much different transaction than you would normally expect with a person of Jeter's celebrity. So you know what else I noticed when Jeter's house came on the market and it went all over the press? One of the very first things I did was I looked it up on Zillow. Mm-hmm. I was kind of curious, $29 million, what's Zillow think it's worth? Zillow thinks it's worth $6
million,
which I thought was laughable.
Hey, right.
But it does show you how far off Zillow can be as you climb the price chart. When you're talking about luxury real estate, if you're talking about a home, I think in Tampa, the luxury market is probably $1 million and up is considered luxury. I mean, there's parts of town where maybe lower than that is considered luxury, but $1 million home in Tampa is a mansion or a McMansion at least. And that's not the case when you look at, California or New York, where you're getting a shed or a bathroom for $1 million. But here $1 million is a valuable home, and you climb the price chart and you see the drastic disparity between what Zillow says the property is worth and what it will go for. Now, I don't think Jeter's mansion will end up selling for $29 million unless some crazy Yankee fan, buys it just because they have a lot of money on Wall Street and because they, they want to sleep in the bed that Jeter slept in or who knows, but it's certainly worth a whole lot more than $6 million.
Yeah. Yeah, it shows that when you get to that price level in such a unique or special property that their algorithms just don't work, right? And let's just face it, that's what Zillow's using and everything else. So it really can't give a proper analysis, and it can be so far off. And you do see that not just on, Jeter's house, but other houses that are in, those high price ranges like you had mentioned.
Well, and I think it's also because, just like a property appraiser, Zillow doesn't get inside the home. They don't see the finishes. They don't know that those countertops cost, $50,000 compared to a normal few thousand bucks in a house. There's so many aspects of a large estate large estate, luxurious mansion like that you can't tell from just data. Even the property appraiser's office isn't going to be able to nail that because for the most part, they don't go inside either. They walk around the outside of the perimeter to determine square footage and determine the quality of the home. You'll notice that on higher end luxury real estate, the property appraiser will either call it normal construction or they'll call it an exceptional residence. And from having Bob Enriquez on the show before, when you talk about the Hillsborough County allocating an exceptional residence, that means it's a higher end home, higher quality, and their price per square foot that they're going to allocate to that space is going to be greater than it would if it was what they considered maybe a not exceptional. Now, you won't see anything on Hillsborough County property appraiser site that says a residence is not exceptional. It'll just say exceptional, or it'll just say, regular single family home. But with Jeter's home specifically, you're talking about an exceptional residence that's going to, have a high tax value. The property taxes on that home alone are $226,000 a year.
Wow.
And I want to say I believe the property appraiser assessed it at $11 million. So that goes to show you the difference between an asking price, a property tax assessment, and a Zillow Zestimate that shows you the drastic disparity that can exist as you get into some of the higher price point homes. But it's funny because we don't realize that. But again, every amount that you go above $1 million, there's a greater chance for Zillow to be off because there aren't really comparables for a home like that. Someone buying Jeter's house is probably just as likely to be looking in Miami, be looking in Los Angeles, to be looking in New York. They're looking all over the country for a home. And they're comparing it to properties there, not necessarily properties in Tampa, because let's face it, three lots of waterfront on an island with an estate like Jeter's, there's really nothing else out there that you could say, oh, that's a comp for Jeter's house. There right. isn't any. There isn't right. a comp.
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. So if it sells quickly, which, you know, usually these things take longer, but supposedly, you know, Tom Brady's renting it right now for $100,000 a month and is going to be building, he's building his own property on Davis Islands is what I've read. I don't know whether it's true or not. So it'll be interesting to see the whole timing of all of that and why, you know, Brady just didn't want to buy that one.
Yeah, well, and I think that, you know, that will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what Brady builds. So let's talk about it from another aspect, though. Let's talk about high net worth luxury home buyers from a financing perspective. We've got a couple of minutes here before a break. What's different when you're talking about qualifying someone to buy a multi-million dollar home? Obviously, you're not dealing with normal loan products right. and a different qualification. What are some unique things about that process for celebrities or athletes, high net worth individuals?
Yeah, so a lot of times what happens is they're using a large number of, you know, assets or the way you would calculate income or they're going to use to calculate their income is going to be more with a process of, you know, not just a typical you go to a job, you get a pay stub, a W-2 and that sort of thing, but you're going to be looking at their overall asset picture. And you're able to qualify over, there's programs out there called asset depletion, where you can look at just their total amount of assets. You know, if somebody has $100 million in the bank or $50 million in the bank, but on paper, they can't prove as much income, it's kind of hard to tell them no, right?
Sure.
They obviously have the money they could turn around and pay the thing cash if they wanted to and whatnot. So there's different and unique loan programs to qualify them, you know, out there, you know, to be able to do so. So I think that is the biggest thing is, you know, when you get into those situations, it's important to have somebody that understands it and understands that it is going to be unique. And almost every situation is a little bit different, you know, on how much they have money. You had mentioned earlier, a lot of times, you know, they put these homes in trusts and different things just for privacy reasons. Well, they also do a lot of that, too, I think, for protection reasons of the assets. So,
sure.
you know, the assets yeah. might not be their quote unquote their asset because it's in a trust that they own.
Correct. Yep. No doubt. And I would assume a lot of the confidentiality things too. You're dealing with, you know, pertinent financial documents and you guys already have a lot of those restrictions just from the government, but I would assume there's a little bit of extra attention on that as well.
Yeah, you do. You know, they don't want you to share and it's, you know, that's something that's private and personal to them. And, you know, they live their entire life out there as celebrities, right? Where they're out in the public. So when you get into those situations, they want to make sure it's protected and that they can trust who they're working with to protect that information and that you're not going to go turn around and just share it. You know, what's going to be there. So absolutely that's involved.
Yep. Awesome. So we're going to be back after a quick break, continuing our conversation here on the Duncan Duo Real Estate Show.
Tampa Bay, if you want to know what's going on in the real estate market, tune in right here on Sundays at 10 a.m. on 970 WFLA for the Duncan Duo Real Estate Show.
We're back here on the Duncan Duo Real Estate Show on 970 WFLA News and with Mike Corrigan from Cross Country Mortgage. I'm Andrew Duncan of the Duncan Duo. When we aren't on air, make sure to follow all of our socials. We are at the Duncan Duo, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and now TikTok. So if you are a TikToker, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but check us out at the Duncan Duo on TikTok as well. We'll be putting out some cool videos and doing some different things with TikTok. So home builder confidence soars to an all-time high despite rising material and labor costs. You know, there's probably, you know, there's no question there's a big bump in home builder activity because of lack of supply of available homes. So buyers don't really have an option with existing resale inventory. So what do? They build. That's a major factor in it. I also think a major factor is, you know, economic strength coming off the coronavirus. It's improved. Labor is back active. I also think there's a part of me that thinks, and you tell me what you think about this, but I think another reason builder activity is up is, you know, the idea or the belief from people that a new home is going to be safer for them, you know, from a virus perspective, you know, better air conditioning, better filtration, new technologies, you know, and of course, you know, that people have been in their existing homes and kind of stuck in them for a while and they get tired of them. Right. So they want something new.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a lot of people that are going from the maybe, you know, move up buyers, you know, we call them that, that are already in a home and they've been stuck in their home. We've talked about this on the show. They've been spent more time in their home than ever before and realized, hey, here's the things that we want in a new home. And a lot of times that leads to the most upgraded technology, the most upgraded safety and the most upgraded. And now the home builders are supplying that and they've adopted to add all that stuff in and they're able to do it on the fly. And I think that's why you got a lot of people going towards that. And again, the commute not being as big of a deal because more people are able to telecommute and that sort of thing. I think a combination of all that is pushing towards the home builders.
Yeah, and because the home builder inventory is going to be out in the suburbs and the rural areas, there's right. not as much ability to build new homes when you're talking about in already developed areas where maybe you'll build, you know, tear downs and infill, but not right. new home subdivisions. So it's a lot of, you know, a lot of activity in the burbs and rural areas. Another thing about it that I think is interesting, and this is something that I'm sure gets factored in too, you know, cheaper to insure, safer from a, you know, from a code perspective. So people are concerned about storms, for example, a new construction home is a better option because you're talking about higher wind code, construction concerns, things like that. Smart homes, more likely to have smart home capability. I think you're having more and more millennial home buyers, and more of the millennial home buyers want the technology in the home to be able to do everything that they want to do that some old homes can't offer. So there's no question that new construction becomes more and more viable. Another thing that often gets unnoticed in Florida when it comes to new construction homes, and I know this because we built our home and moved into it, you know, a little over a year ago, the first year of ownership, you're really only paying taxes on land.
Right.
Depending on when you move in and all that, but you know, because that varies. But you know, the home doesn't get reassessed for property taxes. That doesn't apply as much if you're mortgaging it, because you know, Mike, if you're a mortgage lender, they're going to escrow for the future yep. taxes because they don't want to get stuck. But right. if you're someone that pays cash or doesn't mortgage, that's another benefit of new construction, is that you don't have to pay those, you know, you don't have to pay those property taxes. You know, until this, you know, generally into the second year, late in the first year of ownership.
Yeah. And I think that's something it's an important point that you bring up. I think it's something worth talking about if you are going into that, so that you don't have a big surprise going into the second year as well. Because if you get stuck with, you know, you're just paying them on the land, and so they're very, very low. If you don't prepare accordingly, especially if your mortgage that can be in there, it can really almost increase your payment astronomically if you don't prepare for it for when they are due the second year, and they can go up a lot more. And we've seen a lot of people come to us and say, you know, I got a great rate on my mortgage. I got a great, and they're trying to refinance because what happened is that their previous lender didn't prepare accordingly.
Yeah. And they got used to that payment.
Right.
They got used to that payment, and now all of a sudden it goes up, you know, several hundred dollars a month, and they struggle. So yeah, yes. No question that you guys do a great job with that. There's a lot of lenders that don't, you know, you set that expectation so people are prepared for it. But it's certainly another viable reason why new construction, specifically sure. in Florida. I think you've also got a lot of people that are moving here. Another reason new construction is doing well is because we're getting people moving here from other parts of the country where they're not on a specific timeline. You know, they can wait for the home to be built because they live somewhere else and they're moving from somewhere else, and they continue living there until the home is completed and then put their home on the market and move here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're seeing a lot of activity. So we'll be back after a break. What we're going to talk about next, we're going to talk about buying an old home. What are some things you have to look out for? Pros and cons of older construction frame homes built in the, you know, here we don't have as many, you know, in the Northeast, they've got homes that are built in the 1600s, 1700s. Most of the stuff that we have here is still built in the 1900s, 1920s. Yep. But we're talking about the, you know, the frame bungalows in Old Northeast St. Pete and Seminole Heights and Tampa Heights. You know, what are the pros and cons of buying homes that you know, that check those boxes, you know, for that historical charm for people, there's a cost associated. So we're going to talk about that, give you some warning signs, some things to look out for after a quick break here on the Duncan Duo Show.
Now we're back with the official real estate agents of the Tampa Bay Lightning and the best realtors in Tampa Bay, Andrew Duncan on the Duncan Duo Real Estate Show.
So we talked in the last segment about the new construction construction market and buying, you know, new construction homes, builder confidence, all the pros about buying a new home. But there's still really strong demand for people, specifically throughout Tampa Bay, to live in older frame bungalows, you know, built in the 1900 to 1930s,
yes.
You know, craftsman bungalows, frame homes in many instances, in historic areas, very charming homes. And there's a lot of pros, but some cons associated with that, that a lot of people go into it and they aren't expectant for it. And it seems like we see a lot of millennials, first-time home buyers, that when they gauge the market, they look at, let's just say, Tampa, for example, and they say, you know what, I can't really afford South Tampa, but I work downtown or I'm close to there, or I like Armature Works, and I want to be in a home close to everything, but I can't afford being super close, so let me jump to Tampa and Seminole Heights. And they go and they put a you know, 1920s frame bungalow under contract, and then they cancel because they see the inspection report and all the things that are old on the house. Yeah. You know, if there's one piece of advice I would give first-time home buyers, it would be not to buy. Unless they're very construction savvy, not to buy an older frame bungalow as their first home. Because it's kind of like somebody skipping the minor leagues and going right to, you know, taking a pitch from Steven Strasburg. You know, the reality is that it is an obstacle to own a home like that, and you're just not prepared for home ownership to begin with, and then you put that on top of it. So it's a mistake. You know, I would tell you that's your second or third home after you figured out what it's like to do maintenance and the costs associated. Way too many people buy frame bungalows and they don't maintain them, and then when they go to sell them, they're infested with termites, they've got all kinds of issues, they got water damage, because they bought a home they should have never bought. So, you know, my recommendation for first-time home buyers, just don't go there. You know, buy a block home, buy a new construction home, buy a condo, buy a townhome. But your first home, buying a 1920s bungalow, a lot of people get in over their head.
Yeah, right. They just assume that it's all going to be fine and everything else. And, you know, when you have a home that's, you know, darn near 100 years old and everything else, there's bound to be things that are going to be wrong, that are going to uncover, that you may not even notice, you know, in a home inspection, or may not come up in a home inspection, but 6 months or a year or 2 years down the road, it certainly is going to be there.
Yeah. And I think that, so cost of ownership is also higher. I mean, you're talking about a house that isn't going to be as well insulated,
right?
Isn't going to have as good of windows, isn't going to have as storm safe of a roof, isn't going to have the construction standards. So a lot of the costs associated with owning an older home are higher too. So you're looking at, you know, higher utility costs. You're looking at higher insurance costs, because the insurance company knows that if a storm comes through, that's a home that's more likely to get a damage or leak or a problem, because it's a, you know, frame structure. So you're going to have those two things. Sometimes you're going to have higher taxes because they're in historic districts with a higher millage rate. So, you know, so the home ownership costs of owning an older home are higher. So now there's a trade-off. Let's face it. Living in a bungalow with a great big front porch and, you know, on a beautiful piece of property, you know, it's a beautiful looking home that some of the current, you know, maybe what some people feel are cookie cutter standards of today don't mesh with someone's aesthetic desires. So, you know, but there's a cost associated with it. And in some instances, it's several hundred to over $1,000 difference between a similarly sized newer home, maybe built in the 80s, up to, you know, new construction that is more stable, you know, lower insurance costs, lower taxes, lower utility costs.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and one of the things too, you got to keep in mind when you do, if you do have to upgrade things, if you do go into a house like that, you know, when it was built, you know, the codes are different, right? So you talked about your insurance cost is going to be higher, but if you do go to replace something, you have to bring it then up to code in
Correct.
Many instances, which increases the cost even more, because it's more than just a typical remodel. You got to bring it up to current code.
And you also have certain areas of Tampa Bay where there are historical codes where you have to continue
right.
to preserve the historical aspect of the home.
Yes.
So even if you wanted to update something, it's going to cost more money, because you have to update it while making it still look like construction of yesteryear. And you have a lot of contractors today that just aren't, you know, that's not their strength. They're not good at that. They're good at building new homes. And so there's a lot of obstacles with, you know, with buying. There's also obstacles with financing too, Mike. You know, the property's got to qualify from an inspection, from an insurance perspective.
Yes.
And a lot of older homes have issues with them that they can't be insured or have to, you know, they're below base flood elevation, so then flood insurance is higher. That's something we see a lot, owning an insurance agency. Homes that look perfectly fine, they were built, you know, a long time ago. They're in a flood area, and they weren't built up. You know, so they're below base flood elevation, so the flood risk is astronomically high.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it has to be able to be insured that, you know, that gets in there. And we have run across problems that it can be there. Or some of the, you know, one of the things that comes to mind is, you know, the old knob and tube electric.
Oh, very common.
If the electric wasn't updated, that we just can't lend on that.
And I think that there's so many variables with older homes that, like I said, you're trying to skip the minor leagues a little bit unless you've got some experience. Now, again, there are very experienced homeowners. There are contractors. There are people that can prepare you for it. And there are people that have the money to pay the extra expense because they're happy to have that older, you know, kind of vibe and feel to it. But so many people... Man, I can't tell you. I mean, it's great for my business. They go buy a bungalow a year later, they're ready to sell it because they got in over their head. Hey, I'm not complaining about the extra business, but I'd rather give you the right advice so you don't go and make that mistake. So you can kind of skip that process and not buy it unless you're a really capable, savvy, experienced home buyer. First time home buyers, it's generally been a mistake or a nightmare. We've seen people get into foreclosures because they got in over their head and the repairs and costs exceeded their expectations. So buying an older home has just several more curveballs associated than buying an existing home. And like I said, costs are a big part of it. Costs are generally going to be higher on just about everything. People look at it and say, well, it's a $220,000 house. You know, I qualified for the $220,000 house in that other neighborhood, that, you know, block ranch home built in 1990. And then they try and translate the same thing.
Right.
And it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And you see a lot of those houses that are in that price range. So a lot of people have gone in there and investors have gone in there and bought those houses and then have brought them up to code or rehabbed them and done them all the historical side. And then you see the price is much higher that's on there. And that's really what you got to look at is, you know, how much are you going to have to put into it to get that higher price?
So transitioning to another topic, mortgage rates continue to tumble to yet another all-time low this past week. And obviously they fluctuate. So, you know, if you're listening to this, maybe they're a little bit off the all-time low. But the fact that they, they're 70 basis points lower at this time than they were last year.
Yeah, and that's significant. And that, you know, equating that to, so what does that mean, right? So equating that to buying power and purchase power, it approximately allows you to buy a $30,000, you know, increase your purchase price by $30,000, everything else being equal. Then the same time last year, you could, you know, last year, if you could afford a $300,000 house, now you could afford $330,000, just because the interest rates had dropped, everything else being the same, which is it's just incredible. And, you know, this week the Fed came out again and, you know, forecasted even more and really are showing their hand like they have never before and said, we are going to keep rates low. And we are going to keep rates low for long and, you know, through to 2023. And while we've talked about the Fed funds rate doesn't equate exactly to mortgage rates, they do kind of go, you know, over time, they
have some
of
impact.
Each other.
Yeah.
And so we're going to see low rates.
It's just not instant. Like when the Fed lowers or increases rate, it doesn't have an instant trickle effect to mortgage interest rates, but it does. There's certainly no question it has long term, impact. And I think seeing mortgage rates in the twos is just insane. It's just incredible to me. So the cost of money is so cheap that if you haven't bought, man, you're really missing out. But mortgage rates continue to be low. There's great refinance opportunities for people. And there's certainly no question that if you've been waiting, you know, I hear people all the time, well, I'm going to wait till the values start dropping. But unless you're paying cash, that's less relevant than the interest rate, because prices could go down, 5 or 10% the next year, which they're not going to. I mean, look, every piece of data points to real estate values continuing to grow in Tampa Bay. But even if they did, but interest rates rose up, you offset, you know, unless you're paying cash, you offset what you think you're saving by paying more for the money to borrow to buy the house.
Yep. This is certainly one of the unique times in history where we have had, you know, the market with the supply and demand in line at the same time when interest rates are extremely low and people also have equity into their homes, that it's, you're right. All market indicators, you know, lead to believe that a price appreciation is supported and it'll be supported into the future and we'll continue to see it. So this big drop that people are waiting for, isn't really, isn't on the horizon. I don't see it anywhere. And I know you don't either.
Yeah, no question about it. Not in Tampa Bay. Now, look, yep. We're not talking about New York City,
right,
or Los Angeles or some of the areas of the country that were more impacted by everything going on right now. You know, people are leaving some of those areas in droves because of, you know, everything has happened, you know, and I won't get into the politics of it, but it's a great thing for Tampa Bay. We're seeing more people move here. Well, I mean, I think it's a great thing for the real estate business. It could be a negative thing for Tampa Bay if we become overcrowded or our infrastructure can't handle it. That remains to be seen. We don't know the long-term ramifications of all the people moving here, but in the short term, it's good for our economy. There's a lot of great things you know, happening in Tampa Bay that are bringing people here, and you know, an exciting time. We've got winning sports teams. We've got a future Super Bowl. Right. You know, we've got a quarterback that, you know, even though he didn't have a great week and he's got to move now, hopefully he picks it back up. So we, you know, but nonetheless, there's so many good things coming out of Tampa Bay. All of those things will bring, you know, people to Tampa Bay. We'll bring eyes to Tampa Bay. We'll bring visitors, tourism, all of that. So, well, anyway, we're going to be back wrapping up our last segment after a quick break here on the Duncan Duo Show.
Hey, back with Andrew hosting the Duncan Duo Real Estate Show on 970 AM WFLA. The real estate expert in Tampa, Andrew Duncan of the Duncan Duo. 10 a.m. on 970 WFLA.
So we're back here on the Duncan Duo Show talking about the Tampa Bay real estate market. Andrew Duncan, the Duncan Duo with Mike Corrigan, Cross Country Mortgage. Make sure to follow us on all of our socials. We've got some really cool stuff being done on social media. We have some new billboard campaigns, and I saw proofs of the billboards yesterday. Absolutely hilarious. So
awesome.
If you followed some of our prior billboard campaigns and our Home Selling Kings, for example, we've got some pretty funny stuff coming out. You know, towards the end of the year with our billboards. But as we, you know, continue talking about the real estate market, you can't talk about real estate right now in Florida without talking about storms. And you know, we had Hurricane Sally this week. There's more storms out in the Gulf. There's more concerns for a very active, you know, hurricane season. And, you know, that prompts people to be more conscientious about looking at their insurance. And there's so many people out there that should have, but don't have flood insurance for a moderate cost. And there's so many people that are going to lose their homes, lose their livelihoods, lose hundreds of thousands of dollars fighting with insurance companies because they didn't pay a couple hundred bucks a month for flood insurance. Because that's generally probably the range you're talking about for a home that isn't in a flood zone, that's above the base flood elevation, depending on the size of the home, of course. But flood insurance isn't the expense that people think it is. And there's so many people that make the mistake of not getting the coverage and then they lose everything.
Right. And lots of times people just think, oh, I only need flood insurance if I'm along the coast. And that's just certainly is just not true. The lakes, the rivers, I mean, all the things that can overcome if there is storms that come in, and it's just not covered in your regular homeowner's insurance. And it can be catastrophic.
Our whole state is a flood zone. It's a peninsula.
Right.
I mean, everybody in the state. And I'm amazed sometimes how they determine, you know, flood insurance, because it's, you know, we own an insurance agency, so we help people with this all the time. You know, a lot of you've been listening and you didn't know that we launched an insurance agency a couple of years ago. WeInsureTheBay.com. My wife Angela is the you know, managing insurance agent for the insurance business. So she has two jobs, you know, just like a lot of other people have two jobs. So WeInsureTheBay.com. For flood insurance quotes or for insurance quotes, if you want to shop around, if you want to find a better rate, you know, it's an insurance brokerage. So we've got over 200 carriers. But, you know, right now there's so few people that are taking advantage of that opportunity to get flood insurance. And there's going to be people that are really going to miss out by not getting that coverage.
Yep, and absolutely.
I think another thing that goes unnoticed with people when it comes to you know, flood insurance is they think, oh, my homeowner's insurance will cover me,
right,
or I don't really need it. You know, here's what I would tell you. The reason you don't quote unquote need it is because a government agency has decided, let me just rephrase that again. A government agency has decided that you don't need it. I'm pretty sure the government has messed up before, and they don't know everything. Okay. So if you trust government, like I trust government, AKA not that much, then, you know, then listen to this advice. The federal government and FEMA determine flood insurance rates based on the elevation of your house. That's it. Not historical flooding, not whether the drainage in your area is effective, not whether your area gets more rain or is closer to a body of water. You could literally be on the water and not be required to have flood insurance because you're above the base flood. I mean, it's crazy how they decided. It's so arbitrary. It would be like saying, you know, there is, you know, we're gonna park your car next to a jail that has a bunch of car thieves, but we're gonna charge you the same insurance as we charge a guy that parks his car in a garage hidden in a parking. I mean, it's so arbitrary how they decide that it's based on just this base flood thing. There's no other factors that get considered, and it's nuts. So if don't take their word for it, make your own personal choice about whether you feel like, talk to an agent, talk to us, talk to Angela, you know, Kaylin or Zoe in her office, and determine whether or not it makes sense for you to get it. Because I can tell you, so many people don't get it. And you see what happened in New Orleans. You see what happens in the Panhandle. They lose hundreds of thousands of dollars. Their house gets destroyed. They lose everything because they didn't pay $250 a year. A couple trips to Starbucks every month, basically, is what we're talking about. And, you know, it's bad. It really is. This is going to be a really active hurricane season. Don't wait until it's too late.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't mean to hard sell people, but I've unfortunately had to deal with friends and family members that lost it all because they didn't pay a couple hundred bucks a year.
Yeah, and the amount of, like, just the back and forth and the fighting with the insurance companies to try and get things done when these do happen, it is just – it's really, really tragic, and it's sad, and it goes in. And, again, for a small – you know, relatively small amount of money to protect yourself and what most people think is their biggest investment of their life, their home, and everything else. It really is foolish.
It's not worth the gamble. It's
right. You got to go out and at least find out the information about it and reach out to We Insure to see what it would take to make sure you're protected. I think you'd probably be surprised.
Yeah, no question about it. So again, WeInsureTheBay.com. Get flood insurance, man. Just, it's peace of mind. I mean, you know, you just have no idea what happens in some of these areas. Tampa Bay has been so fortunate, but man, don't roll the dice. Don't take the risk. Don't keep saying, oh, it's never going to hit us. We're lucky. Luck runs out. You know, eventually Mother Nature is going to hit Tampa Bay. And if you don't have flood insurance, you know, God bless you. You're going to have some challenges. So again, WeInsureTheBay.com. And we'll be back. You know, we're rooting on our Tampa Bay Lightning, rooting on our Tampa Bay Bucks. And we'll be back next Sunday to talk about the Tampa Bay real estate market like we are every Sunday. Have an awesome rest of your weekend, Tampa Bay.